Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Welcome in. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be making this part of your day, live from Los Angeles, Doug Gottlieb in for Colin on a Friday. Hope you're having a good day. What do you got planned this weekend? Probably the same thing you're doing today, probably the same thing you did yesterday, same thing you did before. Who would have known that Groundhog Day, not the day Groundhog Day, the movie Groundhog Day, would be such epic foreshadowing for our own lives? Welcome in, Doug Gottlieb in for Colin. Last night they replayed one of the great college football games of all time. I'll tell you why it reminded me of a Will Ferrell movie. Not just because Will Ferrell used to stop by USC's practices. Why it reminded me of a Will Ferrell movie upcoming in just 15 minutes. Got a great show for you. Rex Ryan has used a word that Twitter will freak out about. But I think when we contextualize it, we understand what he's talking about, whether or not he should have said it or shouldn't have said it. I'm sure he's going to be chastised as the worst human being on earth by the end of the day, if it's not already happening. We'll get to that with Jeff Schwartz half past the hour. Let me start with this. Two stories which in and of themselves, if you just told the story, you go like, yeah, that makes sense. But when you combined the two stories, well, now all of a sudden, things get really weird. It's like you're not telling us everything, right? Well, let's start with one story. Tua Tagovailoa, who, of course, is the star quarterback at Alabama, suffered that gruesome hip injury, which shortened his third and final season at Alabama, declared for the NFL draft, and now waiting to be drafted. Well, we keep getting updates every other week, and granted, part of it is his representation. Tua is good to go. Matter of fact, that was the report we got as of yesterday. Tua is 100% go, totally fired up, ready to play right now. Now, some of this is ambitious from his agent. Some of it is just reacting to the fact that he got another checkup from the NFL Combine, who sent some people out to go see him. And all reports are the hip is healing as well or better than possibly expected. Okay, so Tua looks like he'll be a top five draft pick, could go as high as 2, more than likely 3 through 5, won't fall out of the top 10. Keep in mind, no NFL team has been able to get their eye on him in person since the combine. They haven't been able to work him out. And this is an injury where no NFL quarterback has ever come back from and been productive, let alone been a starter or a star. That's Tua Tagovailoa, who will be a top 10 pick in the upcoming NFL draft. That's one story. Here's the other one. Cam Newton, a former league MVP who's been mired with injuries. Remember he had the car accident that he missed some games 4 years ago? Remember the picture of Cam Newton who was upside down, his car flipped, he's upside down in his car? Cam Newton, who's been an NFL MVP, and look, everything that Tua has accomplished, Cam has accomplished even more. He, too, won a national championship in college. He was actually a Heisman Trophy winner. Tua was not. He was the number one pick of the NFL draft. He's been a league MVP, and he's played in a Super Bowl. Yet, despite that, because of the injuries that he sustained, shoulder, and to a lesser extent, his legs, but mostly shoulder, he doesn't have a home, doesn't have a contract out there offer for him. He right now is a, forget about positionless sport, he is a teamless player, not a guy on his team. So I want you to think about that for a second. Cam, it's explainable. Doctors can't get their eyes or hands on him. He can't work out for them. And even though we're told he's fine, they had, you know, the Panthers and independent doctors examined him. Granted, that's not usually enough for teams. Teams want their own guy to get out there. But teams haven't been able to send their guy out to see Tua, yet Tua is going to be a top 10 pick, and Cam doesn't have a team. Am I willing to believe that some of it is finances? Sure. Cam's a star. Cam was set to make $19 million. He wants not only a deal upwards of $19 million, he likely wants multiple years guaranteed. Whereas a rookie contract, you're talking about on the lower side of things, not $10 million. No matter where you're drafted in the draft, especially if you're drafted 3 through 5, it's guaranteed money for 4 years, but it's not nearly the money that you're making if you're a free agent, former MVP quarterback who's only 30 years old. Cam Newton's absence from an NFL roster is explainable. They held on to him kind of long. He likely wants a multi-year contract. He's had a couple of injuries. But Cam Newton is not on a roster, and Tua will be on a roster. And if you don't think that tells you more about all the other parts of Cam Newton and all the other parts of Tua Tagovailoa, you're not paying attention. Right? That's what it – I've pointed this out time and again. It doesn't mean that Cam Newton can't play football anymore. Let's be honest. Cam Newton, if healthy, can likely play football at a pretty high level. But how much are you willing to invest in a guy who's been hurt most of the last 4 years, specifically the last 2 years, and the biggest part of his injury has been his shoulder, which he had a kind of an awkward throwing motion at the end of his season 2 years ago. We thought it was fixed last year, and it wasn't. He sat out most of the year. So I'm not saying he can't play football at all. Look, if he can't throw a football right, he won't be able to play. But if he's healthy, he can play football. But what does it say about Cam that his old head coach, Ron Rivera, who's now in Washington with the Redskins, made a trade for a quarterback in Carolina, and that quarterback wasn't Cam Newton? What is the league telling us about Cam Newton? His old head coach, and heck, even Brandon Bean, we'll tell you what Brandon Bean's been talking about. Brandon Bean's the GM of the Bills. He came from Carolina. So too did Sean McDermott, the head coach, came from Carolina. I know they have Josh Allen. He's the starter, but let's not act like Josh Allen's torn up the world, and maybe you don't want to have a veteran with the type of legacy and image that Cam Newton has, but if you need a backup quarterback, who's better, Cam Newton or Matt Barkley? It ain't close, right? That said, it's not like they're reaching out for Cam Newton. Skins don't want Cam Newton. Panthers don't want Cam Newton. All of these teams would take a shot at Tua Tagovailoa. Now, is it because he's younger? I guess. It tells you about all the other things with Cam that no one wants to talk about. Can he fit into somebody else's team, somebody else's system? Can he evolve as a quarterback? Can he become more accurate? Will he accept a lesser role? Does he always have to have attention? I think if you want to correlate him to anybody, it would probably be to Allen Iverson, where he is a former league MVP, and yet the league will probably retire him early. I don't think this is a retirement offseason, but I do think it's an offseason where if you don't figure out that the league isn't that into you, you're not paying attention. Tua has a hip injury that caused the end of Bo Jackson's career. Granted, the surgery is different. The treatment is different. We're 20 years removed from that happening. So you would expect the rehab to go better, to be smoother, to be less invasive than the rehab was when Bo Jackson got hurt. That said, people don't seem to be nearly as hesitant about drafting Tua as they do about signing Cam Newton. And Cam is a far more accomplished, more polished NFL quarterback who's been an NFL MVP and been a Heisman Trophy winner and won a national championship. And whatever you're going to get him for, you're not going to pay top dollar, and yet no one seems to be interested. If that doesn't tell you about what the league thinks of Cam Newton, the body language, the persona, the ego, the lack of accuracy, the lack of flexibility as a player, maybe football intelligence, I don't know. Nothing else will. Nothing else will. Two guys, same sport, different injuries, but essentially same situation and completely different outlook as of now on the upcoming NFL season. At Gottlieb Show is the Twitter handle. You can always hit us up on Twitter when you want. Just radio only today, so we're all in our skibbies from the waist down, just celebrating a radio day here on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app. Coming up next, I'm going to tell you what we learned about college football and the NFL from a game that was 14 years old and yet played what seemed like live on our TVs last night.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb in for Colin. This is The Herd. Do you rent or own your own home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy for you to bundle your home and auto insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see how much you could save. Geico.com, easy. Last night, Texas versus USC. That was 2006, one of the great college football games of our time in terms of championship games. I pointed out that if you know the Rose Bowl, if you know Southern California sports, I could make the case that John Barnes was had even better game in the Rose Bowl against USC. Final score was like 38-37. He threw for over 200 yards in the fourth quarter alone. That was Todd Mirnovich, Keyshawn Johnson, John Barnes, and J.J. Stokes was the star wide receivers. Anyway, that's a much too L.A. story. For a national game to have SC, back-to-back national champions, that ESPN before the game was crowning as the greatest team of all time, and Texas led by Vince Young, who, there was the top three Heisman vote getters on the field at the same time. Leinart, who had won it the previous year, Reggie Bush, who won it that year, and Vince Young, who finished second. There's a lot of misremembering a bunch of different stuff I'll get to in a second. But one, I love it, and I'll tell you why. Not because I'm a USC hater, even though my brother and sister went to UCLA. It's not like I'm sitting here loving on Texas and Texas and the great high school coaches in the state of Texas, right? That's what Mac Brown always used to say. Men, Texas, the great high school coaches in the state of Texas. Anyway. Keith Jackson on the call. You're just sitting there going like, I forgot how awesome. Like, Ron Franklin had a great voice, great pipes. He called my games when I was in the Big 12, but he was like a mini Keith Jackson, right? Like, I don't want to say poor man's because he was super talented, but Keith Jackson will always be college football. That's no disrespect to the guys who do it now. There's a lot of really, really good ones. Gus does it for us on Fox Sports 1. Fox, he's awesome. But Keith Jackson, we got one here brewing. Didn't he say that? That he said in the third quarter? It's pretty awesome. Here's how I feel about the replays of these championship games. Goulet, were you at the other place when they came through promoting semi-pro?
No, not yet, I don't think. Not yet.
Okay. So here's my Will Ferrell story. Semi-Pro came out in one year. I got to look this up. Semi-Pro was a Will Ferrell movie that came out in 2008. Okay. So in 2008, I come into, there was a green room at the Digital Center. Now, the Digital Center was where all the big shows emanated out of. We were on Sports Center that morning in college basketball and whatever. And Will Ferrell was on the early morning Sports Center, and he had a kind of an entourage with him. And that's a place unlike any other TV place where, at least when we were there, the green room wasn't like there was anything glamorous about the green room. It was a small, confined space right next to, there was a little makeup room in it. There was a couple of TVs on the wall, then one big TV, and that was it. It was just off a hallway. It was a good place to come and get a little silence instead of being in the car wash of going through all the shows. So there's this food that's sitting out there. Keep in mind, there's never food that's free at ESPN. So Tom Brennan, the former Vermont coach, and I are in this green room. We're looking at the food, looking at each other, All of a sudden, in walks Will Ferrell. And he's got all his buddies with him. He's got Kent Alterman with him. Kent Alterman actually directed the movie. And if you remember, Semi-Pro is a comedic look at the ABA. Woody Harrelson's in it. Will Arnett's in it. Andy Richter's in it. I'm sure, you know, it's in the vein of Blades of Glory and Talladega Nights. It was the basketball movie. So all his buddies are with him in it. And Jackie Moon is the star. That's Will Ferrell. And I said, hey, can I, they walk in, don't touch that food. You know, we're like freaking out. Like, we're just kidding. I said, can I ask you guys one question? Will said, yes. One question. No. One question. That's all you get. You get one question. I was like, all right. Maybe before I ask this question, okay, and before I ask this question, Tui, if you had a chance to ask Will Ferrell one question, what would it be?
Good question, Doug.
You only get one question, right? You don't want to screw this thing up.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'd ask if he was related to the drummer with Red Hot Chili Peppers, because they're clearly brothers.
Okay, fair enough. My question that I asked, and you guys tell me if it's a good one, is, hey, Will, look, and, you know, this is like one of those, I'm a fan, obviously, fanboy, want to ask a question. Why are your movies better the second and third and fourth time I see him as opposed to the first time I see him? Right? Is that a fair question to ask? I mean, I remember Talladega Nights. We almost walked out of the theater. Now, if I throw on Talladega Nights, I can't stop laughing. The same, you know, Anchorman, first time you saw Anchorman or even Anchorman 2, you're like, that's not funny. Then you go back and watch, you're like, wow, there's some really, really funny stuff in there. Very funny stuff. So they start laughing and said, we call it layering. Well, what do you mean layering? Like, well, the first time you see a movie, you're watching the movie. You don't know what's going to happen next, and you're trying to find out. Even though you may not be that into the plot, you're still, your brain works for you're trying to figure out the plot and who's going to win and how they're going to win and et cetera, et cetera. After that, the second and third time, you just start picking up on all the funny stuff we're doing. And the way they film a movie, every time they try and do something, everybody does something else different to try and be, oh, that's funny. And they try and top each other. They call it layering. That's what you get when you watch one of these old games. It's Todd McShay, who looked like he was 15 on the sideline. I think people forgot that Reggie Bush, remember they had the Reggie Bush, he pitched the ball, trying lateral to a teammate. Otherwise, they would have been up 14-0. People do forget that Landale White got the ball 4th-and-1 when SC had the ball. All they needed was a first down. Reggie Bush wasn't on the field. Wasn't on the field for 4th down. The Vince Young run for the game-winning touchdown was on 4th down. It was a 4th-and-5 play. Like, if SC gets a stop, the game is over. Over. And then when SC got the ball back, they didn't have any timeouts because they called a timeout in the 2-point conversion. So they hit Reggie Bush, and they get on the other side of the field, and then, you know, they jumbled mess play. Leinert throws it incomplete, but they use up 9 seconds, and they only had 8 left. Whereas they really could have thrown it over the middle of the field, taken a knee, gotten a first down, clock automatically stops, spiked the football, or if they had a timeout, call a timeout, kick a field goal. Maybe the outcome is different. They couldn't do any of those things. My point is, there's lots of things you see the second time you watch a game, the third time you watch a game, that you miss the first time because all you're worried about is the outcome. Now the outcome, you'd be like, I remember Texas won. But how did they win? How did they win? Now here's the other part you get from last night. Tui, you are a native Texan, right?
Yep.
And a Longhorn fan.
Yes.
There have been guys that have played great football games in big games. So I'm not going to sit here and say that Vince Young is the greatest college football player ever. But am I safe in saying in a big game, and that was a big game, that's arguably the biggest college football game of my lifetime, including Clemson, Alabama, whatever, just because SC had won 2 in a row. They're playing essentially at home in the Rose Bowl, playing against the Texas team. Both teams loaded with pros. He played about as well as any quarterback has played in that setting ever. Fair?
Yeah, fair. And remember, like, the numbers nowadays are off the charts, and that's the way it is. But back then, remember, when he rushed for 200 yards and threw for 200 yards, that was massive. That was such a big deal. And they're down 12 with 6 minutes to go. You're thinking, it's over, right? They're not going to come back. And the way he did it, it was just incredible. I mean, as far as like big games.
So now,
yeah.
Right, right. So here's the thing. And we have people that will, they'll like, well, can't we just give him the Heisman Trophy now? No. Look, you may not like the way the Heisman Trophy is decided, but if you remember the last week of the college football season, Vince played against Texas A&M on the road. The Texas A&M was in the Big 12 then, and he did not play particularly well. The last game of the night was USC playing, and I think it was UCLA, and Reggie Bush was otherworldly. Like, he was so much better than everybody else in the field. It was stupid. So, like, look, if you want to do anything with the Heisman, give the damn thing back to Reggie. But don't tell me that because Vince was better in the championship game. Look, if we want to change all the rules and all the Heisman should be dependent upon what you do in a bowl game, fine. But we've never done that before. We're probably not going to do that after. So here's the big takeaway is Vince Young was about as good a college football quarterback as we've ever seen. About as dominant. And, you know, if you watch, his throwing motion wasn't great. It wasn't like he was doing progression reads. But I can't think of five guys that have been as or more dominant at the quarterback. Like Tommy Frazier was too. But as long as we understand getting ready for the NFL draft, that college success, even at the quarterback position, is not a determinant for how you're going to do in the pros. And it should be pointed out that Vince Young, who had some off-the-field issues, right? He was running up like a $10,000 a month bill at Cheesecake Factory in Nashville. You know, he took a shot like every day at lunch at their bar. Like, he had some personal demons there that he was working through. He was a Pro Bowler his rookie year, but the league adjusted to him and he didn't have that next gear in him. But the point is, I'm watching and you're thinking, this guy's about as good as anybody I've ever seen play college football, and he wasn't a good pro because it's a different sport. And when you're watching Jalen Hurts and the numbers he puts up, just understand why he's going to go so low is because it's a different sport. They put on helmets, they put on shoulder pads, they put on cleats, they play with footballs. It is technically called the same thing, but it's a different sport.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Let me defend Rex Ryan for a second, okay? Over the next, it's a Friday, so I don't know how long this lasts. It every day does kind of run into it. I'm sure a lot of you are like, wait, it's Friday? Thank God it's Friday. The only difference between Friday and Saturday is if whatever amount of work you're doing, you might do a little bit less. It's one of the things we're learning about working at home, which is, you know, you don't have to get dressed up unless you got like a Zoom meeting and then you can do the waist up Anchorman thing. And then, you know, like, look, it's really interesting to me on how the good news about working from home is you don't have to fight traffic. There's not traffic right now. And there's lots of things you don't have to do. On the other hand, work is always there. So even though you don't have a time you have to be there and you can't, and then a time that you can go home, there's never really a time which you have to separate yourself from work. Like having an office is kind of healthy. Like I've been going in a couple days a week doing my radio show, the Doug Gottlieb Show. By the way, download the all-new All Ball podcast. It's on the Herd Podcast Network. This week's version is a long conversation with Stan Johnson. He's new head coach at Loyola Marymount, but an amazing personal story that took him from Liberia, where he grew up as a kid, to Salt Lake City, throughout college basketball, and then as a college basketball assistant, now his first job in L.A. That's All Ball on the Herd Podcast Network. You know, I go in, you know, if nothing else, just to get a break from home. And that way, when you're home, you can be home. Whereas when you work from home, it's really hard to, when do you stop working? But it is a Friday. Generally, the news and sports shows on a Friday, they go away because we get to Saturday and Sunday, we have games. I don't know how it works now. There's no real news dump Fridays the way there used to be because everybody's paying attention to the news on a daily and sometimes hourly basis, right? But Rex Ryan was on Get Up earlier today. He had this to say about the Amari Cooper signing.
To me, this is the biggest disappearing act in the National Football League. He doesn't show up on the road. He doesn't show up against, when the competition's good, when he's against the top corners, that guy disappears. This is who he is. And Dan, he doesn't love football. Hell with it. He stops his routes. He does all this. I wouldn't have paid this turd. No way in hell.
So, look, if you... If you wrap it around everything he's talking about, it does not appear, by my estimation, to be a personal attack. There's, you can tell me that the word turd, that this turd, it makes it him. You know, you're not saying he plays like a turd, which would have completely separated himself from being personal. But Rex is talking about his performance, his love for football, his work ethic on the football field, specifically in bigger games and on the road. And when he calls him a turd, there is no, and he's a turd who hangs out late at night. Like, no, there is nothing about personal. Now, other members of the media, football players, they'll make it into something personal. I can almost guarantee that Rex just meant like, no, dude, you quit on routes. And I mean, if we saw him, he was not in the game against Philadelphia when they needed a first down late in the last regular season road game against the Eagles when they were essentially knocked out of the playoffs, got his coach fired. And we've often talked about the play calling here, and that's ultimately what, okay, that's ultimately what got it done. But Amari Cooper, this is how coaches talk. Like, this is what we do. This isn't us as a, or you as a viewer, as a, what is the term I like to use? Not citizen. I'm blanking on a word I usually use, civilian. Like my basketball friends and I, when we see people comment on stuff and they're like, I don't really know what we're talking about. It's like, civilians see it differently. Civilians hear the word turd, you're like, whoa, he's calling him a turd. That must mean that he's a jerk off the football field, that he's late to meetings, that he does something unsavory. Like, no, I don't think that's what Rex Ryan meant. If that's what he meant, that's what he would have said surrounding the word turd. Instead, he was talking about performance and performance alone. The flaw in this is, to me, is Mike Greenberg, who's doing the interview. It's his show, and the follow-up is, wait, you called him a turd. Is there something off the football field? I'm sure Rex would have said, like, no. Like, you know, if when you get against tough physical guys and you don't get a call, you quit, you stop running your routes when you're not getting the football, we, you know, where I'm from, we call that, you're being a turd. Which, that's how, and I've seen some football players react and say, you know, now you know why Rex Ryan doesn't have a job. But there's also others. Also others that that realize he's bringing coaches' locker room conversations into your living room. And, oh yeah, by the way, that's what he's supposed to do. You don't have to agree with it. You don't have to agree with it at all. You don't have to like it. You don't have to agree with it. By the way, most people who do agree with it are like, well, I wouldn't have used the word turd. Okay, but you're not a coach and you don't know exactly what he meant by it. But he does come up small in some big games and does quit on, like, okay. So what he's saying is accurate. You just don't like the word turd the way he heard. Okay. Look, sports people talk about people within their industry completely differently than the way civilians do. You know, this is like when Phil Jackson said to LeBron and his posse, it wasn't a racial term. Come on, man. The guys you hang out with, your clique, your crew, your posse, that's not a racial epithet, not even close. Everybody in sport knows that. Everybody in life knows that. But if you want to make something racial, you can. If you want to make something personal, you can. And that's what people will do with Rex Ryan. And oh yeah, by the way, he's speaking to what's messed up about the Cowboys. Right? Which is, and we talked about this yesterday, which is, they're signing Aldon Smith not because out of the goodness of their heart trying to rehab Aldon Smith and change his life. They're hiring Aldon Smith to be their rush end because they can't afford to sign anybody as a free agent legitimately because they still got to pay Dak. They're paying Amari. You know, they're paying Jalen Smith. They're paying Ezekiel Elliott. That's real talk. And I think Rex Ryan is giving some real talk as well. Do I think he's a little bit more over the top than he probably needs to be, or maybe even accurately? Sure, but that doesn't reverberate when you say it on TV. When you say a guy's a turd, everybody's like, well, excuse me, who's he talking about? Amari Cooper, like, really? And you even get media people who cover the NFL like, well, I've never heard that. I've never heard he has any sort of personal baggage. Like, no, Rex Ryan didn't say he had any sort of personal baggage. He didn't. Like, isn't that the way when you were studying, Goulet, were you SAT or ACT?
SAT.
Okay. Remember when you were studying for the SAT, they were like, you know, if you don't know the meaning of the word, try and figure it out based upon not only the prefix or suffix, but also in the way in which it's used in a sentence?
Yeah, it's one of my best skills. I don't know the word, but I kind of can figure out how you're using it.
Right. So if you think that it was a personal and offensive message or word from Rex Ryan, how come nothing else he was talking about was in fact personal? There was no point. Like, again, it's a weird word to throw in there. I have heard it used on guys that don't play hard, that quit on plays. It's not like I haven't heard it. But the idea, it's really hard for me to say it's definitely personal, but there's nothing personal about the rest of his remarks. You're a Cowboy fan, Goulet. Oh, how do you feel about Amari Cooper's contract?
I mean, I think it's a slight overpay, but anything I've ever heard from anyone on the Cowboys, covers the Cowboys, is like Amari's a absolutely great guy who was – they usually blame injuries for his problem. But is he overpaid? Yeah, but is he kind of worth – like, he's not overpaid by much. He's a number one receiver that fixed their offense.
Yeah. Okay. When you heard the word turd, did you think it was personal?
Yeah. Yeah, I thought – you know what was interesting, Doug? I don't know if you remember this, but we had Rob Ryan on the show about a month ago, and he said something similar. He didn't call him a turd, but he was against him too. So maybe the Ryan brothers have this shared anti-Amari Cooper take that they're just going to keep putting out there.
Yeah, or maybe they've interacted with him more, or they've coached against him more. Maybe that's the Rob Ryan who was. I'm trying to think. Was he with? He wasn't with the Raiders when Amari was there. He was with the Redskins in 2019. So he definitely saw Amari Cooper. So that's obviously they've seen it on tape. And how guys appear on tape is completely different to how they appear before us. You see guys on tape, you're like, ee. You know, it's a lot like the Cam Newton thing. And Cam Newton, I talked to an NFL GM. I told you I had like a virtual coffee with him on Saturday. And he was like, look, Cam Newton doesn't, there's something wrong. There was something wrong with his shoulder a year and a half ago. And it, whatever he got to get fixed, his throwing motion wasn't right going back to last year. I'm not signing a guy who's got a shoulder problem to play quarterback in the NFL. But you don't have people saying that, right? You won't have people, or Lamar Jackson, you know, they'll point out, let's look at the numbers, like, man, he was really efficient. And yeah, because the throws that they allowed him to make, they set up for him to make, are right in his wheelhouse. He still has the same inaccuracies on some of the other throws that outside the numbers, but the Ravens didn't design things for him to make those throws. What happens is we get so caught up in stats and fantasy football and Pro Bowls that we're not willing to take a breath and think, okay, maybe this is actual analysis. I don't know. I haven't watched the All-22 on Amari and how hard he plays when he's not getting the football. My guess would be, though, that there is some information to this and that it doesn't have anything to do with the personal. It has to do with the fact that they believe he quits when he's not going to get the ball or when you're super physical with him. Look, and at home, 52 catches, 869 yards, 5 TDs. On the road, 27 catches, 320 yards, 3 TDs. In that game against the Eagles on the road, game 15, week 16, 4 catches, 24 yards, wasn't in on the last drive in several plays. Those numbers don't lie. I don't think Rex meant it personal. It did come across as personal, and I'm guessing there's an apology and some sort of characterization of what he had to say.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Let's continue the football conversation as Joel Klatt will join us in a second. And it's really interesting to me how we look back. 2006, I don't know, when you say it out loud, it doesn't feel that long ago. Maybe it's because 2020 sounds way off into the future. Like, did you ever stop? I don't know if you're like this. Did you stop to think it's 2020? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how your mind works. Maybe it's that there's not a I don't write checks anymore. I can't remember the last time I wrote a check. And when you do, you're like, wait, what year is it? What day is it? I mean, even my wrist gets tired writing things. Right? You pay everything online. And then when you see like the expiration date on your credit card, you're like, oh, 2023. Like that is 10 years away. Like, actually, no, it's like 3 years away. Anyway, I was watching the 2006 Rose Bowl last night. And I was thinking about how much football has changed. Some of it's the same. How do we avoid kind of the pitfalls of, how do you avoid the pitfalls of some of those players that were overdrafted because of the success of either USC or Texas? Like, really, that's one of the things that happens. You see a team, you see what great football it is, and you assume that because they're all highly rated and they're all good, that rising tide does lift all ships. And many of those guys were overdrafted. And even our view of, like, Lendell White, who got the ball on fourth down. Like, does anybody realize how productive Lendell White was even that season or how good Lendell White was for a time as a pro? Like, Lendell White was a stud, man. An absolute stud. He didn't get the first down, but he did. He had a 1,000-yard rushing season in the NFL. Like, he did? Like, yeah, he did. And then you look at his USC stats, and granted, all their stats were crazy because they were just so loaded with talent. But, you know, in the year in question, in 2005, he had 1,300 yards and 24 touchdowns and had two receiving touchdowns, like 26 touchdowns, and he wasn't the big back for SC. Like, that was Reggie Bush's year. Reggie Bush had 1,740 yards rushing, 478 yards receiving. They both had two touchdowns. It was like, you know, they combined for over 3,000 yards rushing. But because of how their pro careers went or didn't go, Lendell White's was like 4 years long. He had one really good season and then flamed out. That's how we view guys.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Let's get to Joel Klatt, lead college football analyst for Fox Sports. Joel, are you able to play any golf with all the clubhouses closed?
No. So it's been 10 days since I so that is not a problem in the real world, certainly. And I'm hoping everybody is safe and healthy out there, but no golf right now in the Klatt household.
What is homeschool like at in the Klatt household?
You know, it's as people know out there, the younger the kids are, the harder the homeschool process is, just because it's very hard for them to just go off on their own and you know, have their iPad and do their school day. So we have a second grader who's our oldest, and then a TK-er, transitional kindergarten, that's right before kindergarten, he's five, and then a three-year-old. So the stages of our kids are, I feel like, tougher than most. And I got to tell you, second grade is a lot different than when I was in second grade. The second grade math, it can get a little difficult.
Listen, I have two in eighth grade. I can't help them. I've forgotten how to do slope. They're doing one's got a quiz she's taking right now, the Pythagorean theorem. She's literally taking it in the room next to me. And the other one's like, oh, I took that one. Yeah, they're both like, I know it. I was like, I don't really know. I don't know.
Here's the question, though. When is it okay to look at them straight in their eyes and be like, hey, dirty secret, you will never need this?
Yeah, I mean, look, the conversation we have is this, is did you like school? I've gotten this question from them. No, I did not. But I have found that it's the only way to see all of your friends in one place every day, that they're all having to go. And if you don't go and then don't get good grades, you can't go to a cool college and play sports and meet girls, right? So that's my sale to my son, who does not enjoy going to school. He actually does, but sometimes the girls will bring him down. In terms of not using the math specifically, like, look, I would say, like, I agree you're not going to use it, but the two things. One, we don't make up the rules. Colleges are going to use your grades. So you can say it's not fair, but life's not fair. It's going to be judged. You're going to be judged based upon your grade in this thing. And the second thing is, you do actually have to understand processes and using formulas, even if you don't really understand the math. I do think it has a little bit more value than on its surface it has. So that's the way that I form the argument.
Well done. Well done. You're a good father.
I don't know if I'm a good father, but that's the best I can do. Did you watch last night's SC Texas game? Shocking surprise ending. Did you watch it?
I did watch it. I still think it's my favorite game I've ever seen. I didn't witness it, but that I've ever watched. It was maybe the greatest college football game ever.
Ever. You had a couple good, Ohio State-Michigan game a couple years ago was really, really. You've had some really good ones, obviously more regular season than national championship. Now, you played against that Texas team when you were quarterback at Colorado, right?
That's right. We actually played them three times in one calendar year, once when I was a junior, and then twice that season that they won the championship. We lost to them, obviously, in Texas in the regular season, had to play them again in the Big 12 championship game in Houston, and they absolutely destroyed us. That team was on a mission late in the year.
Why wasn't Vince Young a better NFL quarterback?
Well, I mean, he was the rookie of the year. I think that if he would have come out now, I think it would have been a much different story. I think if he would have had a different coach in the NFL, it would have been a much different story. I think that they were trying to fit a square peg into a round hole at that point. And his brilliance, which shone through early in his career, you remember the overtime run from the 50-yard line? Like, he did some incredible things. And then they kept hammering on him, like, okay, you got to get into the box, get into the box, get into the box. And he was never allowed to just be Vince Young in the National Football League. And I think ultimately – that's what cut his career short. I think if he would have had a coach that allowed him to play the way that he played, that would have shaped an offense to his strengths rather than just run the offense that they had always run, I think Vince would have had a really long NFL career. I think he was one of the casualties of the non-evolved NFL of, 10, 15 years ago.
Joel Klatt joining us here in the Herd. Doug Gottlieb filling in for Colin. I'm interested in Tua. Tua appears to be healthy. You got multiple doctors saying he's above and beyond what they thought his progress would be at this time. How do you evaluate? Let's just start with the pure evaluation. How do you evaluate Tua? You have to consider the injuries, but how do you evaluate Tua as an NFL prospect?
Yeah, so he makes really good decisions. He's got quick release. He's got good anticipation. I love the fact that he's very decisive in the pocket. I think that he's got good footwork. He's not a great elusive athlete. That's what has led to some of these injuries. And in fact, I'd say my biggest knock on Tua is that he's not as athletic as he thinks he is, which is why he gets these specific injuries. When you look at the way that he injured both of his ankles, when you look at the way that he injured his hip, Doug, what you see is a guy that thinks he can run away from people and he can't. So he gets caught from behind and he gets those legs rolled up on. He is a good athlete and he is elusive, but not as much as he thinks he is. I think that his ability to win with accuracy is there. At times he can be a bit frenetic in terms of when he releases the ball and how quickly he's trying to get it out of his hand. And there are times when there are obvious, easy throws that he chooses to go elsewhere. Another thing that I might be a little concerned about with Tua is that he had unbelievable receivers, likely three first round guys out there to throw to. And you get into a situation as a quarterback where you believe the game is easier than it is. Right. And that's one of the reasons why I love Burrow is that Burrow is surgical with his offense, whereas Tua is not quite as surgical. And he'll go places within his offensive system that he's not supposed to, but he still wins because of the level of gap between his athletes and his opposition's athletes.
Okay, so this is really interesting. I'm going to disagree with you on Vince Young just because I don't think that Vince would have been, and maybe it's the stories we knew about his personal story or whatever, and the lack of accuracy. He kind of pushed the ball when he threw it, but it would have been interesting to see him in Lamar Jackson's offense, for example, and see what he could do because he was a dominant athlete. He was maybe more Cam Newton without as big an arm as Cam Newton had. But Matt Leinart is the, it may be the parallel to Tua, what you're saying about Tua, right? Because Matt Leinart was surrounded by so much talent that, like you said, the game could have been a little easier. You can miss a little bit. You can throw one up to somebody and they'll go make a play. Like, that's the fear there, right? Is that the inadequacies, which everybody has, but are lessened in terms of how they look because you got a star going against just a guy out at wide receiver at running back. Is that accurate?
Yeah. I think that's accurate. There's no doubt that is accurate. And by the way, the injury stuff, Doug, is not just about the hip. It's like,
right.
I'm thrilled for him that his hip is healthy and that he's getting all these all clears from the doctors and these doctors that are trusted. His videos look amazing on social media. But it wasn't one freak accident with his hip. He had two ankle surgeries. He never completed a full season in college football. Think about that. He always had to miss time based on a surgery, not just, you know, little soft tissue injuries. That's concerning to me, in particular when you look at a guy like Burrow who played every single game and did not deal with those injury issues. And when you really break down their games, I just think that Burrow is a more surgical player. His decision-making is as good as any quarterback I've evaluated during my time evaluating for the NFL draft. This is going to be, what is my sixth or seventh draft that I've covered. And his decision-making ability, the ball goes right where it's supposed to go all the time. And you've heard me say this a lot. I think that quarterback can be, at times, a bottom-line proposition. I don't really care how tall you are, how strong your arm is, what your feet look like, so on and so forth. I could probably garner what all of those things are based on this question. Is the ball on time and on target? And Joe Burrow is by far the best quarterback in this draft when it comes to, is the ball on time and on target? His accuracy is amazing. He throws an imminently catchable football. And when you look at him versus Tua, there's a little bit of separation. Then when you look at the separation between Tua and then the rest of the draft, I think that there is a steep cliff between those top two and then guys like Herbert and Love and Eason and Fromm and Hurts. There is a drastic gap between the top two and what I would categorize as the other quarterbacks in this draft. And it's mainly because those top two understand that they're out there to pass the football. And some of the other guys, they feel at times that they're out there to throw the football.
There is
a big distinction between a guy that can throw the ball and a guy that can pass the ball. And I think understanding the difference is what makes evaluation important.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'd love to do like a dual show where you show that in football, I show it in basketball, right? Because there are guys that there are guys that they make the right pass. Can you create shots for guys, and then do you deliver the ball on time and in rhythm, right? And then like the very next step is in basketball, can you seam it for them, right? Can you throw it to them so it's on the seam so they don't have to set it? Like, you can do all of those things. You're a great passer. There are guys that rack up assists that can pass, but they don't create shots for others. So I totally understand the parallel of what you're saying. Joel Klatt joining us, lead college football analyst for Fox Sports. Kirk Herbstreit came out and said he'd be surprised if we had a full season of college football, which I think Dabo Swinney's like, zero doubt we're going to start. I'm somewhere probably in between the two. I did notice this Iowa State story, and I'm sure you did too. Iowa State, their budget's going to be at least $5 million off. And so Matt Campbell's not going to take bonuses. They're all going to take pay cuts across the board. What do you think college football looks like when it gets underway in September?
Oh man, that's a giant question. First of all, I don't know when college football will happen. I just believe that it will happen. It's too important to everything else that goes along in intercollegiate athletics. Remember, Doug, football pays for 80% of everything out there. You do not have other programs. You do not have intercollegiate athletics without college football. So whether we start in September, start in October, November, or December, college football, in my estimation, will be played next year. And I think that's what Dabo was kind of referencing. And in particular, when you look at, and I know this wasn't really part of your question, but I will go into the budget side. Yes, Iowa State, I think, is getting out ahead of what is going to be the financial pinch of this season as it relates to athletic department's budgets. And I commend them for doing that. This is one of the reasons why Jamie is such a well-thought-of athletic director out there. He's one of the best, actually, in all of the country. Jamie Pollard, the AD at Iowa State. Now, they came out a couple of days ago. I'm losing track of my days, but they said, hey, spring sport athletes are going to have eligibility next year. I don't know if you've talked about it or not, but the Division I Council of Athletics came out and said that, okay? Which everyone says, hey, that's great. And I agree that that's great. But the devil is in the details here, because what they also said is that it's going to be up to each school how they determine the financial aid packages for those spring sport athletes. Remember, spring sports do not make any money, period. All right? Men's basketball is over by this point. Football is over by this point. These sports are non-revenue sports. And in this waiver that the NCAA gave, they said each school determines financial aid. Remember, the NCAA revenue share was cut this year due to the loss of the NCAA tournament from the men's basketball standpoint. You can expect to take a massive hit just from COVID-19 and donations because of the economy and attendance. So while each school can access the student assistant fund of the NCAA and potentially help in financial aid with these spring sport athletes, that financial aid assistance is going to be much lower than it has been in the past. So I'm here to tell you that this ruling for spring sport athletes is 100% dependent on playing football at some point. Okay, these are the details that I feel like need to be brought to the forefront when discussing the college football season, is the imminent danger of intercollegiate athletics if the season is not played. This is why I believe 100%, Doug, that we will have football. Now, whether we kick off in April, September, December, October, I don't know when it's going to kick off. I just know that these schools have to play college football at some point. And then those spring sport athletes, maybe they'll get a chance to continue on with financial aid and get that extra year of eligibility. Last point I want to make, and I know you're probably running up against a break, but I will just say, if you see schools say, hey, you can come back and play in spring sports, but we don't have any money for you, this is going to be a drastic gap between those athletes that come from affluent families and those athletes that do not. The separation of classes with these athletes is going to be drastic. The ones that can take advantage of this waiver and the ones that can't.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.